And we're back. It's the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5. That's the third part of our and concluding part of our interview with Fred Jerome. And you got all the details there. We're going to be talking shortly with David Jacobs about this election in Britain of the new leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn. Remember that on the 20th in Toronto, Eve Engler is going to be here speaking at Betsatoon at 7 p.m. That's Sunday, June 20. And on Saturday, the 19th, there was going to be at a demonstration. It begins at Yonge Dundas Square, Toronto, at 1 p.m. on Saturday, the 19th, to end the U.S. blockade of Cuba, which continues to this day, despite all the headlines and smiles and in Havana and Washington. Washington is doing his usual thing. And so make sure that you know about those things. But we're joined now by David Jacobs. Are you there, David?
I am. How are you?
Well, thank you very much. David, you not only are practice international law and have been a candidate for the NDP in Toronto, you must be surprised, or no, maybe not surprised. You must be impressed at the winning of the leadership by Mr. Jeremy Corbyn, Labour Party in Britain. What do you?
Yeah,
tell us about that.
Impressed, exhilarated. it's kind of a terrific thing. And I come from a Labour Party family. My parents were both active in the Labour Party in Wales, and at that time, it was a Labour Party that stood for a bunch of things, including socialism. And that, of course,
changed. Ooh, I think you just said the magic word. We're going to have to check if we're still on the air.
Yeah,
ah, yes,
right.
Okay.
That's right. And that's changed, of course. And the big change was Tony Blair and New Labour and the Third Way and all of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. They went the way of the Third Way.
They went the way of the Third Way. That was something sort of that was repeated all over the place. The politics of Bill Clinton, who was not a socialist, were introduced into the Labour Party. The Labour Party got rid of Clause 4, which was calling for public ownership of the means of production and that kind of stuff. Clause 4 of the Constitution, which people are saying that Jeremy Corbyn is threatening to bring back. But I think the context of this is sort of remarkable sea change in politics all around the world, where people who are not mainstream, and what I think the mainstream means is people who've accommodated themselves to neoliberal and austerity and imperialist war policies abroad.
Well, what does he say about those things?
Well, on austerity, he's opposed to austerity, and he does want to bring down the deficit, but he wants to do it by taxing the wealthy, growing the economy, getting the UK to a point of nuclear disarmament, not going ahead with building the Trident missile program, and he wants to introduce something which I'm not sure I understand, but it just sounds good. It's called people's quantitative easing, which will allow the Bank of England to print money and invest in large-scale housing and so on. By the way,
well, he wants to protect housing for ordinary people in the City of London.
He does. He wants
so it doesn't become like New York and San Francisco and like London's becoming.
That's right. He wants to introduce rent control in central London. Mm-hmm. So that families who are not well off and people on welfare are not pushed out of the area. He claims that what's happening is a form of social cleansing in London, and he wants to build 250,000 new homes for people who are not
sounds
not
like Roosevelt.
Rich. Yeah, he wants to do that.
Which, as you know, is also not permitted.
Yes, no, definitely not. And he says he intends to withdraw from NATO, as I said. He is in favor of unilateral nuclear disarmament. And he talks about things like, this is just remarkable stuff, like dealing with the situation of the refugees in the Middle East and so on by having peace conferences. And he says he will not support any airstrikes in Syria, saying that bombing the country kills people, won't defeat ISIS, and it'd be better to cut off the supply of money and arms to ISIS
He says that.
He says from some of our. He says from some of our supposed allies in the region.
So he actually seems to know the score, doesn't he?
Well, he definitely does. And he's not obviously a Johnny come lately. He's a 66-year-old man who's been a politician for an awful long time. And I must say, I recommend to anyone, if anyone wants to know what he's about and what David Cameron's about, somebody posted on Facebook a wonderful juxtaposition of pictures that where were they in the 1980s? And it's a black and white photograph of Jeremy Corbyn wearing an anti-apartheid poster being
arrested.
Being arrested, yes, by police. And the other side of the page is David Cameron together with Boris Johnson, Lord Mayor of London, in there at Eton, I guess, Eton College, wearing white tie and tails and trying to look cool with coiffed hair and stuff.
It's oh, I think his hair is still coiffed.
It's just amazing.
He didn't sacrifice everything.
Well, it's an amazing juxtaposition. And you have to think about it. The media, the mainstream media, are just so wildly behind the times. They're still stuck in thinking of, you know, all you can do for the foreseeable future. And for the foreseeable future, they mean the next 40 or 50,000 years, is tinker with neoliberalism. It's kind of like...
Sooner or later, the trickle will begin to trickle.
That's right, it will. It's like, the politicians who said, well, we can't talk about alternatives to capitalism. It's just what kind of capitalism we have. And so they didn't see this coming, just as they didn't see the success of, or unfortunately, well, the short-lived success of Syriza, or at least the popular support for the anti-austerity.
Well, how about the
Syriza?
Occupy was in Britain, the Occupy movement was huge.
The Occupy movement.
And, you know, you mentioned a moment ago about his position on Syria. Yes. That was the position taken by the British Parliament in 2013 when Obama said it was 48 hours to bombing Damascus.
That's right. Well, that's right.
And they said, well, the British Parliament says no.
Well, at the time Corbyn entered the race, the odds on him winning were 200 to 1. And Polly Toynbee in The Guardian, somebody who really can't stand Corbyn, kept writing that, I can't remember who she said was a person to beat, but whoever she said was a person to beat got beat. And the numbers were just staggering. I mean, firstly, there were three categories of voters. There were party members, there were affiliates, and I forget, I'm sorry, maybe it was the trade union affiliates was the third party, the third category. But he won in all categories, and the numbers were staggering. I mean, Liz Kendall, who was the Tony Blair supporting candidate, got the least votes, 4%, I think, and it was something like 19,000 votes. The next two candidates, Burnham and I'm sorry, I've forgotten the name of this next candidate, but anyway, they both got around 80,000 votes. Corbyn got 260,000 votes, first ballot victory. And if you think about that, the deputy leader was only elected. Tom Watson was elected on the third ballot. Mm-hmm. So he comes in with a blaze, and he walked out of the victory and said, well, my next thing, I'm going to go to a mass demonstration outside in Parliament Square in Westminster to support refugees. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, he joined in an impromptu chorus of the red flag with Billy Bragg, the folk singer. You know, though cowards flinch and traitors fear, we'll keep the red flag flying.
Yes, Blair told everybody to stop singing.
Yeah, I don't think Blair knew the words. And Billy Bragg, who had quit the party over Blair, said he has rejoined the party. So there's that. And now he's put together a cabinet, shadow cabinet, they call it in the UK. Campaign manager John McDonnell is being appointed shadow chancellor, and he was the leader of the socialist campaign group in Parliament.
He's the deputy.
He's the deputy. And
my goodness, Tony, no, Blairites need not apply.
I think that's right.
Oh, let me know. How about you talked about the media? The media, by the way, seems to have their feelings hurt because they told everybody what to do and the people didn't do it. But The Toronto Star, to my knowledge, has yet to report this. Do you suppose they're waiting for a strategic recount or something?
I don't know. I mean, I do think, you know, we're seeing more and more of the media being blindsided, right? So I do think, what's happening...
They probably started
shocked.
That way.
Yeah, that's right. They're shocked. I mean, even in our own Canada, right, you have the Notley government being elected overwhelmingly in Alberta, which was supposed to be...
Not possible
at all. And the prospect, of course, of a Tom Mulcair NDP government federally, which I think, or I hope, should be given a boost by the popularity of Corbyn.
Well, it certainly shows that the word fed up is not just a term. People
right.
are.
And yeah.
You know, you mentioned, look, I understand he intends to renationalize rail.
Yes. And the banks, by the way. He intends to nationalize banks.
Good. Yeah. Well, now, it's been pointed out by poll takers that actually many so-called conservative Britons like that idea because they liked the system they had. And these privatizers really disgruntled an awful lot of people who were basically liberal conservative in Britain.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, you know, these views that are considered so outrageous by the media are frankly majority views, right? I mean, 70% of Brits, I think similar numbers in Canada, were opposed to the invasion of Iraq. But you have the Stephen Harpers and, frankly, the Obamas and Bushes and everything like that, who usually don't care about democracy and public opinion, just go that way. Yeah. I mean, if you want to know where Tony Blair is going to go on, Tony Blair, by the way, wrote a couple of blistering attacks on Corbyn and said,
"That helped
me." It did.
Helped
me if you like, but don't vote for Corbyn. It's going to be a disaster, etc. You know?
Or come down and meet me in jail. I mean, he doesn't understand how close he is to being in a slammer.
Well, one of the people who suggested he stand trial as a war criminal is Jeremy Corbyn.
But now Corbyn now has a motive. You mentioned Greece, by the way. And he was opposed to the treatment of Greece by the European banks.
Yes, that's right, to my understanding. Not just that, by the way. He's opposed to NATO, American, Canadian, British policy on Ukraine.
And NATO per se.
And NATO per se. No, he wants to get out of NATO. He's described...
talk about the trident.
The trident? Well, he, as a result of his saying that he wants to scrap the trident submarines, sorry, I said missiles earlier, but submarines, the trident submarines, which are massively expensive, he's been called a threat to national security by David Cameron. And more than that, he's being derided as a patsy of the Scottish nationalists.
Don't like the trident.
Who don't like the trident either, by the way, and do have a much more sympathetic foreign policy position to the foreign policy positions that Corbyn has. They don't like these foreign adventures either. Mm-hmm. But by the way, I do think that's somewhat of a reflection of Mulcair. When Mulcair says that if there's a referendum in Quebec, and it's 50% plus one, then we have to deal with it. And he's been, of course, derided as a patsy of the separatists,
yes.
right? And so,
yes.
I mean, they're very similar.
Yes, the new candidate, Chrétien, is telling us that.
That's right. So Chrétien comes out of the
mothballs.
Mothballs, yeah. as Tony Blair did. Maybe to similar effect, actually, you know, a lack of effect.
Yes.
I
really appreciate all the summary, I agree with you. I have to ask you, though, in closing here, one question as your authority on international law practiced in front of the tribunal in both Yugoslavia and Rwanda. I'm going to be interviewing a gentleman about the abduction of an investigator, and as you know, in June of this year, a UN investigator, he was taken off the streets, it's suspected, by the Kigali government. I'm not aware of any reaction from any international institution or government. Can you tell, what's your thinking?
Well, my thinking is I'm not aware of it either. And it's a kind of a horrific situation because you put a tribunal in the middle of Tanzania and away from all kinds of people, which has a lot of it has a lot of power because other governments have acceded to its demands. So people from all over the world are either extradited for trial there, or they become part of the staff on the defense side or the prosecution side and so on. But once that becomes known, at least if you're on the defense side, and particularly if you're a Rwandan person on the defense side, staff on the defense side, I think you're in peril from the dangerous Kigali regime. And one would think that the United Nations, which wants to protect the integrity of international criminal law systems like the ICTR, would want to see that it has some integrity, and it's going to do what it can to, just as it did what it could to ensure the extradition of people for trial. Should do it. It should to pressure governments for at least an accounting. As far as I know, we don't really know what's happened to the investigator.
Yes,
and it's horrific that that somebody can act as an investigator, accredited. By the way, he had to be accredited by the ICTR, approved as an investigator.
Accredited and vetted.
Yeah,
it's a real tragedy. And I really appreciate your points on this. We've been speaking to David Jacobs, Toronto lawyer, former candidate for the NDP, and a supporter of Jeremy Corbyn, by the way. Thank you. Thank you very, very much, David.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And you're listening to The Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. You can call us. Can you really? No, you write to us at taylor@ciut.fm. We're on the web, taylor-report.com. I'm going to remind you, by the way, that Eve Engler is coming to town on the 20th at 7 p.m. at Beth Satoon. He's talking his new book about Africa, Aid and Exploitation of Africa. Brilliant book. We had him as a guest on this show. And on the 19th, Saturday, there's going to be a demonstration at Yonge and Dundas protesting the U.S. blockade of Cuba, despite what you might have read about warming relations, et cetera. The blockade is in place. And that would be 1 o'clock, Yonge and Dundas Square, Saturday.